Episode 84. Welcome to the Take Up Code podcast, where you can learn valuable insights and skills in programming. I'm Waheed Tanner and will be your host today. The update method behavioral pattern works with the previous game loop pattern and lets you manage the behavior of multiple game characters. The best way to become a professional programmer is to start writing code. If you're not actually typing code, building it, and running it, then you're missing more than half of what you need to be doing. Have you considered attending a Take Up Code live class? Text PROGRAM to the short number 44222 and you'll be on your way. The basic description says that this pattern simulates the behavior of multiple independent objects by updating each one frame at a time. We've actually finished going through all the patterns in the Gang of Four book. There's a really good book called Game Programming Patterns by Robert Nystrom that I recommend that documents several more patterns applicable to game development. If you're building a game that has a fixed number of game elements, or at least a fixed number at the start of the game, and each one just sits there until one piece is moved each turn, then this pattern is not the best choice. You might still be able to use it if the game pieces have some independent behavior. Maybe they randomly taunt the player or have some unique animation. But if they just wait for their turn to move, then this pattern is not the right choice. This pattern is perfect for an adventure game where the hero can stumble across a pack of wolves. Some of the wolves will rush the hero, while others might try to circle around and attack from the rear. Or even if there are no monsters involved at all and the hero is just walking through town. Unless this is a ghost town, there should be other people too, and each other character will be busy with personal tasks and errands. Without this pattern, how would you manage all these diverse situations? Maybe you could put four separate wolves in the game loop, but this would quickly make a complete mess of your game loop. Not just with trying to keep track of each of the wolves, but more importantly, trying to keep track that there should be wolves in the first place. What we need is a way to treat each villain, each monster, and each town guard the same. Then they can all be put in a collection of game objects, and we can use polymorphism to call an update method on each one. Polymorphism was explained in episode 25 about inheritance and overriding methods. I'll explain it quickly here again. You start out with a base class that declares a virtual method. In this case, that method will be called update. Then, in specific derived classes, you override the update method to do something specific for that derived class. Now, if you know that you have a pack of wolves to deal with, and they're all wolves, then this might seem like just some extra work with no benefit. But if the hero can get those wolves to follow him back to town, then maybe the guards will join in the fight. This is where polymorphism comes into play. By treating all the game objects as if they are all the same base class, then, when the update method is called, it'll be routed to the proper class type, either a wolf or a guard, depending on the actual type of the instance. Because a wolf and a guard might have different data members and occupy different amounts of memory, we can't put them all in the same collection. Items in a collection need to all be the same. But we can put pointers to the base class in the collection. And that's how polymorphism works. You have a collection of base class pointers that actually point to different derived classes, and when you call a virtual base class method, then the appropriate derived class method override is what gets called. Now that we have a way to treat game objects the same through a base class that defines a virtual update method, we can put any number of these game objects in the collection. And this actually leads to an important benefit of this design pattern. It allows you to load game objects as needed into the game. This allows you to control the game through a data file. The game designers can now specify a particular intersection of two roads in the forest and define that there should be some kind of encounter with one or more wild beasts. The game designers can make the actual type of creatures dependent on the hero's experience. At the beginning of the game, maybe the hero is attacked by a couple rats. And later, the same location might be populated with the pack of wolves. There's some more details about this pattern that I'll explain right after this message from our sponsor. The one thing that all professional programmers share is that we take action. Go ahead, text PROGRAM to the number 44222 now. It's hard, I know, to get started, and if you need some help, then all you need to do is register for one of the Take Up Code free or paid live classes. You can attend with just your computer and an internet connection from anywhere in the world. These are live workshops instead of just lectures. You get enough lecturing already. These are fun workshops. You have enough boring tasks already. And these are focused on results. Text the word PROGRAM to the number 44222 and you'll be on your way. You can also visit takeupcode.com to begin. If it wasn't for the common application of this technique within game loops, this might not have ever reached the status of a design pattern. It's really just a collection of derived classes that all override a method called update. What makes this a pattern is that you'll likely need to do the same thing in any game that fits the description at the beginning of this episode. And because of this specific usage, there's some other details you should be aware of. Here's three specific problems you'll need to consider. The first thing is that the game loop will call update on each game object one after another. Over the course of many frames, this has the appearance of updating each game object at almost the same time. It's that almost part that can cause problems, though, especially when the objects interact with each other. Let's say the first wolf gets updated and it checks where the second wolf is before deciding where to go next. The first wolf is looking at the location of the second wolf as it currently exists. Then the game loop updates the second wolf. Now the second wolf will be basing its actions on the newly updated state of the first wolf. There's a mismatch that can cause problems, and the order that the game objects are updated can affect the outcome. This is a problem waiting to hatch into a bug. You might be able to control this by using the double buffer pattern described in episode 82. If you take this approach, then the game loop first updates each game object, but this update occurs in a private copy of each object's state. This allows each game object to make update decisions based on a consistent snapshot of all the game objects. Once all the updates are done, the game loop can go through all the game objects again and call another virtual method to commit the changes. This swaps the buffers of each game object. If you don't understand what I'm talking about, make sure you listen to episode 82 and then come back to this episode. The next thing to be aware of is applicable anytime you have a collection that you're iterating through, and that's the difficulties of modifying the collection while trying to visit each of them in the collection. Why would you need to modify the collection? Well, at some point, the hero will hopefully destroy the rats or the wolves attacking the hero. Or maybe the hero is fighting an evil magic user who summons another creature to help fight. The point is that game objects can come and go, and you need to handle this properly. Maybe you don't include new game objects in the update method calls during the same frame that the new object appears. And for dead objects, instead of removing them from the collection immediately, maybe you can set a flag to remember the creature is dead. Then, after all the game objects have been updated, you can make another pass through the collection to remove or add objects. The last thing to consider is the scope of the game object collection. A large game set in an open world is not going to be able to hold every single game object, and even if it could, do you really want to be updating each one for each frame? Some of the game objects might never even be encountered by the hero, or maybe they're far out of sight. In the real world, we all have our lives that we each experience in full detail in every moment. Even if we're not aware of all this detail, it's still there. This is the old problem that says, if a tree falls in a forest and there's nobody around to hear it, does it still make a sound? Philosophers have been debating this forever, and the answer has little effect on our lives. But the answer and actually the approach you take as a developer when dealing with this problem is very applicable to a game. Why would you waste precious processing time simulating a frame-by-frame fall of a tree when the game character is nowhere around? Obviously, you won't. But at the same time, if the hero spots a pack of wolves and decides to run away instead of fight, then what do you do when the hero visits the same spot again later? If the wolves are in the same spot several days later, then the game starts to lose a lot of the immersion qualities. It seems fake and boring. And the same thing can happen if the player decides to fight instead and brings the hero back just minutes later. In this case, the wolves had better still be there, or the game will also seem fake and shallow. Thank you for listening. Make sure to check out the other episodes, and if you get value, please give the Take Up Code podcast a rating, hopefully 5 stars, and a review. I'll select several people who take the time to provide thoughtful reviews, good or bad, and give you a shout-out and a big thank you during our Q&A Fridays. Your support goes a long way to helping this podcast thrive and help others learn how to program. If you have any questions about this episode or even other programming questions, please ask. Just go to takeupcode.com/contact and submit your question. The Q&A Friday episodes are where I'll answer one or more submitted questions. Until next time, keep learning, but even better, keep doing. If you want to learn how to program, then start programming. And you'll learn and get better, and your mind will expand in ways you never thought possible.